Good evening. Welcome to the Oceano Community Services District this fine November 9th, 2016. And Ms. Celia, may I ask you to perform a roll call?
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Blackburn?
Here.
Director Guerrero?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Lucy?
Here. Thank you. Karen, I'm going to ask you to lead us in the flag salute as I always do, but why don't you stay sitting because you just had some stuff, so spin around there, kiddo.
Attention, everybody else. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation,
under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right. Does anybody have any changes, modifications, additions to the agenda at this time?
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? It passes. Wonderful. At this time, we'll take a public comment. This is for items that are not on the agenda tonight. So if you have any burning desire to speak for something that's not on the agenda, this is your time to do it.
Hello, everyone. Hello, board. I'm John Clemens from Oceano. Tomorrow's Hunger Marine Day. Tomorrow is the 241st birthday of the United States Marine Corps. Marine Corps was originally founded in Tuntaber, Pennsylvania on 10 November 1775. So if you see or know a Marine veteran, or anybody associated with the Marine Corps tomorrow, make sure you give them a good hug and you tell them happy birthday.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your service.
Happy birthday.
Andrew Brunet, I just firstly wanted to say to all the community of Oceano, just thank you for turning out to vote. A lot of ballots are still going to be counted, but just really appreciate the voters and the new board that will be coming on. So thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else who'd like to speak at this time? Hearing none, I'm going to close public comment and move forward.
I have a quick question on that. Papa, do you know when the election will be certified for the CSD here?
I do, and I was going to cover that during the general manager
report. I'll wait then.
Okay.
And I'd like to, of course, thank everybody who ran.
And everybody who voted.
Exactly.
How you doing, Tony? Did you tell us?
Happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. Good evening, board. Tony Maricino. So we haven't spoken about a month, and since then, we've had 26 work orders, 11 USAs, 18 customer service calls, 5 after-hour call-outs, continuing sewer jetting. That's basically complete for our SSMP, but actually we're going to go above and beyond. And tonight, actually tomorrow morning at 1 in the morning, we're going to start cleaning all of Highway 1. So we'll be working from 1 to 9:30 in the morning tomorrow.
Wow.
Maintenance of the old fire station, cutting down some tree limbs, CHC infrastructure on 21st Street. They've installed the main back teed it. It's an 8-inch. The fire hydrant's in place. All the services are connected to it. So that aspect of the water for that is in place. It went really smooth for the most part. And so I'm looking forward to seeing it get paved and continue on with the CHC building.
That's a very exciting project for this town.
It is. I'm excited, too.
Yeah, all of us are.
All right. We had a call out for 2300 Cienega, a broken line. That's the trailer park, the mobile home park that you're aware of. And we actually repaired the line, and about 9 days later, the line blew apart 15 feet down from where we repaired it. So we got called back out for that one, and we completely replaced it with everything new. Their infrastructure is deteriorating. It's just more and more call-outs to that location. All right. So we had maintenance on all the fire extinguishers out here. We've installed 40-plus meters, concreted them in when needed to be, continue to do trash with Cody. let me see what else. State water deliveries for us, for Oceano, is 591 acre feet. We've only pumped just over 3 acre feet. Lopez is currently at 23.1%, which is 11,419 acre feet. We had our first SSO out of a manhole out on Tierra Nueva. In Tierra Nueva, we cleaned that location back in March. So it was a root intrusion. So you can see how there's a lot of trees on the right side of Tierra Nueva, and they're starving for water, apparently. And they found our manhole and actually stopped it up. We spilt about 120 gallons. And we did get to collect the majority of that up. The SSO was reported in a timely manner. Everything went smooth, though. We got rid of the roots, and it's a drought.
So it's going to be a hot spot from now on, probably.
We'll keep an eye on it. It's just the root intrusions happened within about 7 months. I was really shocked because they were just there, you know, the third month of the year, cleaned that whole area. Didn't see any roots.
Is that the eucalyptus trees, or it's trees on the other side?
You have eucalyptus and avocado in that area.
Yeah. Okay, so it's the avocado.
I'm assuming it's one of those two. I don't know roots from trees. They just infiltrated.
Yeah, it sounds like avocados.
Yes, there's quite a few avocado trees there.
Yeah.
So we will keep an eye on it. But that's the first SSO from manhole since I've been here.
Wow.
So, you know, the crew is maintaining the SSMP and cleaning.
It's one of the reasons we got the Bacter trailers.
Absolutely.
So, Tony, I want to ask you is if, let's see, there's about 130 spots in 2300 Seneca? Is that about?
Off the top of my head, I'd say roughly 100, 110.
Yeah, right. So if the whole site is beginning to deteriorate from age and stuff, and you're going to have to keep going out there, is there maybe a plan on just maybe it's more cost effective to kind of build it into the budget and just
actually, I spoke with the general manager, and we found some documentation from 1977 on responsibilities, on who's responsible for what, and keep communication with the GM and trying to figure out who's actually responsible for it. Because what we so far interpreted, we're not responsible for paving when a break happens, and we found that through documentation.
Great.
So that's something I'm pursuing with the GM currently to find out even if we are liable for that area.
Right. I just hate to see going in and out, costing it up when...
Correct.
You know. Okay.
So if you're not busy tonight, you can stop by at 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, we'll be on Highway 1.
Do you have some law enforcement backup?
Four?
Four speeders or anything?
No, actually, it's the best time to clean Highway 1. Less traffic. We're going to have two service trucks plus the dump truck and jetter out there. A lot of lights. There's just, you know, it's the safest and then most convenient time, and we can get through it the quickest. Just because of the lack of traffic. We did it last year, and it went really smooth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Yes, sir?
Yeah, that was on...
Pancake breakfast?
No, I think we're supposed to do that.
So thank you also, Tony.
For your Thanks service. A lot, Tony.
Thank
and
you.
If you take off early, we know why. Okay. Five Cities Fire Authority.
Yeah, I can do that right now.
Okay.
We haven't had any major challenges in the last couple of weeks, but there has been two special meetings of the Five Cities Fire Authority. We're in... negotiations with our union over wages and some other issues. It's ongoing right now.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for Karen on this?
No, thank you.
All right, thanks, Karen. Zone 3.
President Lucy, the Zone 3 meeting is week after next, so I have nothing to report at this time.
Thought maybe you had a secret meeting or something.
No secret meetings.
Okay.
Those are no fun.
Does anybody What?
My GM report, though.
Yes.
Okay, so as Director Guerrero had asked, the council and I refreshed our memory on the elections code. So it's Friday, November 28th, that the county elections officer is mandated to provide election results. It is then by noon on Friday, December 2nd, that the new board members need to be sworn in. So, and then there's another thing. So what I would like to do is to have a special meeting on the evening of Thursday, December 1st, in order to say goodbye to the existing three board members. And staff might want to do a little bit of a roast, but we'll leave that as a surprise.
Like a pot roast?
Yeah, like a pot roast.
A rump roast.
It's legal now.
Yeah.
I don't know nothing about it.
Okay, bad idea. We won't do that. The idea Thursday evening and then Friday morning at 11, and I have to outreach once we get final election results, around 11 o'clock on Friday morning, December 2nd, to do swearing in for the new board members.
Great.
I had some communication with Gerhard Hubner with the Sanitation District, because at that swearing in, we probably also need to identify the president and the vice president, because otherwise we won't, and identify who's going to be the Sanitation District representative. Otherwise, we won't have a representative at their December 7th meeting. But other than doing those quick appointments, it's primarily a swearing in, and then maybe again have some cookies or something, so that if members of the community want to come in and do some meet and greet with the new board members, then we can do that as well.
All right.
Great.
Okay.
Put it
good.
On my calendar.
Okay. Yeah. It's on our calendars. You don't have to order me a calendar this coming year.
She hasn't unrolled the last 2 years.
I did too. Okay.
And I don't need one either.
All right. Outside committees, and let's shake it up. Jen.
Okay. Let's see. October 18th, I attended the Zone 1-1A committee meeting, and they have completed the vegetation maintenance. At the end of October, they did that. They received an opinion letter on the water management plan where they were being requested to provide an alternate wider buffer. So, but that is not an alternative that landowners are very appreciative of. So they are trying their negotiations, I think, to figure out what they're going to do about that. And in terms of the rain and the levee protection, they've decided not to put on the levee protection, but they do have the supplies if it's needed and can do so within a month's notice or so if needed. I also attended the Oceano Advisory Council the end of October, and we received a presentation from Cody about the solid waste. It's the same presentation that we received here, and the council gave opinions very similar to the board, actually, in terms of the trash cans that they preferred and just general support for the work that's going on. And we also went over the draft plan, the draft preliminary plan for the revitalization, and a few of us were also able to attend the public meeting. There were a few members of the public there as well, and we got to ask a lot of questions and give opinions as individuals on the different areas that they're proposing. So that will be, they're looking, I think they have closed their comment on that now.
Yes.
So that is the advisory council. Okay. And then I think the most exciting one was the Regional Water Management Board, thanks to staff and representatives, OCSD was able to put forward an option for the disadvantaged community funds that was agreed to by all the parties, which was really exciting. It will be confirmed at the next meeting, which will be the December meeting, I believe. And then the recommendations will be sent to the Board of Supervisors, well, to RAC first, and then to the Board of Supervisors. So that was really exciting. And the what was agreed to was that the original 10% of the funding that was allocated for the implement, no, not the implementation, sorry. What was it? The evaluation. I'm sorry?
It was a
training. Yeah, the involvement. That's right.
Yes.
Sorry. So for education and planning and things like that, the 10% will stay with the disadvantaged communities that were originally involved, including San Simeon, San Miguel, Oceano, and Grover Beach. And the amount that the city of San Luis was requesting will be taken out of the larger amount. So essentially the 10% was increased to include San Luis, but the other smaller groups were able to keep the funding that they were originally looking at the beginning. So it was greatly appreciated, all the consensus. And that's very exciting to move forward.
And I think that that meant then that our funding allocation was going to increase from around $156,000 to about $175,000.
Yes. Thank you.
Good work.
Yeah, yeah, good work, Jen.
Good well, well done.
You get to, you earned your stipend.
I too was able to attend that meeting, and I want to thank Jen for coming up with that compromise. But I do see problems down the road, and the definition of how you define your community as disadvantaged is very, very loosely defined, and it would be in the best interest of communities who aren't just looking for resources that are truly disadvantaged, that the criteria be tightened up some, because for a city such as San Luis Obispo to compare themselves to a community such as Oceano is, you know, it was different. It was taken differently. I think Renee from San Simeon said it well, is that she said, look, if the city of San Luis Obispo is strapped for cash, you know, we're not ones to take anything away from anybody. And then that was immediately clarified that they're not strapped for cash and they have plenty of cash. So she did admit that they were just looking to be able to mark that box on application. So if that's going to occur on the backs of communities that truly need that money, then those policies need to be strengthened. So did you do anything this week, Matt?
Just a murder trial.
Just a murder trial.
But I do have a question after the rest of the Board of Directors committee reports. I wanted to go back and ask Paavo something once everybody else has a chance.
Did you attend any meetings?
Nope.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
Last week? Oh, I guess that's true. It's been a month. I've had a lot of stuff going on. That's true. I did go to the sanitation district meeting. I'm sorry I didn't bring the agenda, but we had a number of issues. One was an appeal to the board by two employees. We were able to come to a resolution on that particular appeal and provide some direction to staff, though we had denied the appeal. Then, God, I'm drawing a blank. That was the big one. We also had a review of the manager. I got to look up the agenda. Jog my memory. Sorry.
It's okay. Did you talk about redundancy? Feasibility study?
Nope. We lost a lot of those.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
My thumb's typed in the wrong.
Do you want me to come back to it?
Yeah, why don't we do that? I'm sorry.
Do you think there's more to add?
Yeah, give me a second here. Go ahead and come back to me, and I'll look at the agenda.
Lori, were you able to attend any? I think you did attend something.
Yeah, today I attended the revitalization plan that we talked about and discussed from what we drew from the corral that was here.
Mm-hmm.
And we went over a few items of, you know, these possibilities, and how we are going to make a selection as to what's.
Well, you were talking about the review committee.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Because I was like, wait a minute, I'm pretty good on keeping my meetings.
No, it's just. You
but know. You're on the review panel.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Great.
So it was informative and kind of, you know, we all got together and sat down and talked and discussed about what we feel is the priorities first and the funding and that type of thing and how we're going to make it all fall into place.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was a good meeting.
Great. And how are they going to make it fall into place?
Funding is going to be the big issue, and where to start first. There's certain items like they want to, where the Triangle Park is. We're going to work with that. Also, further up the street on 15th and Ocean, there's a possibility of some changes there, which they saw at the bowl out thing on the,
mm-hmm.
end of the street.
Roundabout?
That was discussed. It's not a roundabout. It's actually going to close that off with sidewalk.
Knuckle.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And just some different variances and things that we all discussed about and information that we had collected, you know, some of the property owners and things like that. So it was a good discussion, and we kind of laid things out that we thought were more productive to do first,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then, you know, as things go on further and further, we'll include some other items, providing we have the funding.
I'm really glad you're on that board.
It's been
Thank you for... agreeing to do that. Karen, did you did the fire. You were kind of busy this last couple of weeks,
yeah,
right?
I could send a thank you shout out to the Acute Rehabilitation Center at Arroyo Grande Community Hospital, which is a great place to go if you're going to have hip replacement. You get one day in bed, then they get you up, and that's it, folks. Keep rolling.
Okay.
I don't have anything to add, President Lucy.
You don't, Matt? Okay. I attended the Water Resource Advisory Committee. It's one of my favorite committees. I will be keeping attending that. They do encourage everybody to come. You don't just have to sit at the table to be involved. So there was a lot of updates, a lot of discussion around low reservoirs and the different reservoirs in the county and stuff. And there was a long discussion on the DAC funding and updated from the earlier meeting of the IRWM and the discussions and things that were brought up there. And I did attend the IRWM as well that day, along with the DAC subcommittee. So, oh, no, we didn't do DAC subcommittee, but I was there for the day. So... I was able to attend the revitalization meeting, the community meeting that was held to look at the plans and see. I think they were pretty open to what people had their input and what they thought. I, like all projects, you know, it's the money. Of course, it's Oceano. Of course, it's going to be an issue of money. You know, nothing comes easy for us, but we're used to fighting for things. So, but I think that if this plan is able to be implemented and even 50% brought along, it will definitely enhance the area. I was able to meet with our Supervisor Compton last Thursday. Jen met with her as well to give her an update. And also Linda Austin was able to join us. And we mainly talked about the DAC funding and then a lot on working collaboratively on debris and trash with OCSD. And so they were there. And I think that's about it. I'm sure I had a couple more, but
President
they were voluntary. Yeah, Matt.
You actually brought up what I wanted to discuss with Pavo about. Obviously, there was that article in the San Luis Obispo Tribune about the trash that's piling up and the ratepayer that was having those issues. I thought it was unfortunate that the efforts and activities in our public service announcement, hey, where is that, by the way? We worked on and the efforts, the Adopt Alley, the trash cleanup that we just had all got lost, you know, that we actually have been addressing these exact issues, and the Tribune didn't reach out to us as far as I could tell. So I was wondering if maybe a...
They weren't informed that we do these programs.
And I'm thinking that maybe some sort of outreach to the Tribune to say, hey, you know, this is what we've got going, and this is what we've been doing on, similar to what Cody did with the PSA, might be a good letter, editorial commentary, something to the Tribune to clear up that.
Obviously I read the article as well. The thing that gave me a little bit of relief was the idea that there was no assertions against OCSD. I'm not sure if
until
they...
you got to the comments later on.
Yeah. I'm not sure how much the Tribune was actually aware of what we were doing.
It didn't seem they were aware at all.
Yeah, and so it struck me as being, surprised me a little bit, I guess. I think that our first immediate follow-up really needs to be with state parks, because obviously what we've been doing in the district, we started the enforcement efforts soon after I got hired, but what we've been doing this fiscal year is really developing the other programs that I like to generally characterize as the incentive programs. And it's and so Cody has drafted a lot of proposed policies on those items, and we're really going to be bringing out those draft documents at the December 14th meeting with the new board, and then doing the PSA and some of the community outreach on that. And so our enforcement and our incentive programs are a big part of what we're doing. The two other areas is really the coordination with the county and the coordination with state parks. So I think it was last August I had sent a letter to the county planning director on how we might coordinate efforts associated with condemnations. The property on Pier Avenue that was condemned earlier in the year, it was about 7 months before the rubbish was removed off of that property. And I had had both discussions with Sheriff's Department as well as Five Cities Fire, because the rubbish left that is on property of condemned sites is separate from the structure itself. And clearly the structure is something that the county just purely has to deal with under county land use planning jurisdiction. But there may be some opportunities to coordinate with them on the rubbish side of it. I think it would require them bifurcating their condemnation notices to have two parts to it. A, you need to deal with the structure, and B, you need to deal with the rubbish. And the rubbish side, because of our garbage powers, we may be able to assist to get it done quicker. 7 months is just not acceptable to be able to get rid of the rubbish. And the problem is that it's an attractive nuisance to homeless. It's a challenge for law enforcement if they have issues. And in the event of a fire, it creates a significant, you know, hazard to Five Cities Fire Authority. So
the health and safety.
Yeah, and the basic, and so it is the basic health and safety issue right. That provides the county with the ability to initiate the condemnation effort. So, I think the follow-up discussion with the county is we're interested in coordinating. We have powers that we think we can help get it done quicker. The bottom line is it just has to get done quicker. 7 months is not acceptable. And so following up with the county on those coordination issues, separately following up with state parks on, you know, the litter and the other debris that's left behind when we have big events and stuff. So that's the next direction that we're going to head Cody into.
Didn't we discuss, or am I misrecollecting, having a list of vendors or approved vendors that can do cleanups?
Yes, and we have. Okay. And so in the event that we need assistance, especially on illegal dumping, because South County Sanitary, our franchise garbage collection company,
right.
will do certain things, but they won't do other things. So we have lined up a separate company that we can contract on, you know, a purchase order basis in order to, if it's a matter of bagging things or getting them ready for South County Sanitary to come in and take away. We have to obviously be very careful, and I think, can't remember who our contact is, but if we have syringes and other things that are medical biohazards, then we have to deal with those separately. So we do have contacts established on those different efforts. And we have used the private company in one situation to help us with an illegal dumping. So more work to be done, but I think specifically with relationship relating to the article that was on the Tribune, it begs for more coordination with county planning and state parks. And so I want to make sure to initiate those efforts as well.
Yeah. And the only reason why that debris was hauled away was because the whoever's buying that property stepped in and handled it. Otherwise, we would still be having a problem with it. But it won't be the last time it happened. So the quicker coordination occurs, the better. The supervisor, they so probably overwhelmed that they didn't realize that we had the garbage agreement and that we could assist, and that you had made several attempts to work with the code enforcement.
Yeah, that's right. I think that our reminder, our follow-up with them helped prompt, you know, it getting done. And I agree that even though that particular case has been dealt with, we need to have the coordination efforts for future cases.
That's right. Okay, great. Does anybody else have anything they want to add before I open it up to the public?
Thank you.
All right. At this time, we'll have public comment for items 6A, 6B, special presentations and committee reports. Hi, Jim.
Jim Caldwell, live here in Oceano. I think Mr. Ogren and the board should know this last weekend there was the music festival down at the beach called Pismotion. I don't know about it being any financial success to anyone, but I happened to be down there on Sunday, and there was quite a mess there. A lot of people, very informal, and I wanted deliberately to go look on Monday to see the condition of the beach. It was fantastic. Whoever negotiated that contract on behalf of State Parks did a great job. And Cody should know that. He can compliment them on it because they picked up trash that was just incredible and did a great job.
Did they pick it up or did they plow it under?
No, they picked it up. It was not plowed under.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. In the revitalization, we did talk about putting larger trash receptacles down Pier Avenue, so to try to help in the future. So, anything
actually,
else? Does anybody else have any more public comment at this time? Hearing none, I'll close public comment. Did you have something you'd like to offer, Jen?
I just had a question. I was wondering if I didn't catch before I came whether or not Measure J passed. Do we know that yet?
I think Measure J is too close to call. My last recall is at 65%. My understanding was it required a two-thirds vote. So
okay. That's right.
I think final election results will tell us that answer.
Because I know that some of the revitalization is would be funded by that measure, and so that's why I was wondering.
Okay. Interesting. But 2.5 was supposed to come to the Oceano area. All right. Moving right along.
Close call.
It also would have mm-hmm. dealt with Highway 1, the sidewalks and stuff, more pedestrian and bike-friendly stuff on Highway 1.
Right. All right. Yes. Consent agenda items. Mr. Ogren, do you want to walk us through this real quick, or Celia, or Carrie? Or
Madam President, so on consent agenda, we don't have any comments. The intent is first public comment. If your board had any quick questions, then we'd be glad to answer them. If there's any extensive questions, then items should be moved to the business items.
Okay.
But no verbal staff presentations to augment was in writing.
All right. Any public comment on consent agenda items? Ms. Tucker?
Good evening. I'm Julie Tucker, and happy birthday, Paavo. A little belated, but I thought since everybody's getting birthday wishes, I might as well throw that in. Congratulations on having your audit finally complete. I have some problems with the engagement letter with Caliber Audit and Attest. The last time you entered into an agreement with them was March 15th of 2015, and you are on record saying one more year. And Mr. Ogren was going to go out for RFP for a new auditor. This last July 13th, he explained to your board that it was necessary to keep Caliber Audit and Attest, and that they would do the 15-16 audit. Proposal was 5% over that current audit. So you were paying $19,500 plus 5% is $20,475. The proposal before you tonight is $24,000. And while in the scheme of things, maybe it's not a lot of money, in the scheme of these things, Los Osos has a similar budget to yours, $4 million, and their audit this year is $17,400. The South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District has a $5 million budget. Their audit is $11,500. Arroyo Grande has a $24 million budget. They're paying $19,200. Pismo Beach has a $36 million budget, $35,000. Grover Beach, this year they have a larger budget than normal because of their road project, $28 million. They're paying $35,000 for their audit. Oceano has a $4 million budget. Most of it is spent on water and fire, purchasing water and directly paying for the fire department. What's left, about $1.3 million, is not a lot of money to audit. So I don't understand how Caliber Audit and Attest can command this price and that your board continues to enter into agreements with them. And I know the best practices, it's not law, but the best practices are that you leave auditing firms on a five-year interval, and this will be the sixth year that you've had Caliber Audit and Attest.
Thank you, Ms. Tucker. Mr. Burnett?
Andrew Burnett, yeah, I did have a question regarding, and it's at the very end of the first statement letter from the auditor, and I'll just read it. It says, management has admitted management's discussion and analysis that accounting principles generally accepted in the United States of America require to be presented to supplement the basic financial statements. Such missing information, although not part of the basic financial statements, is required by the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, who considers it to be an essential part of financial reporting for placing the basic financial statements in an appropriate operational, economic, or historical context. Our opinion on the basic financial statements is not affected by this missing information. I was just curious why that wasn't included in order for transparency purposes and that nature. Thank you.
Do you want to answer that?
I can certainly. I was going to check to make sure if there was any other public comments, so I could.
I think public comment is closed.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Mr. Brunet actually brings up a good point in also responding to Ms. Tacker's question. The supplemental information that Mr. Brunet is addressing and is part of the audit report. is actually consistent with this district's presentation of its financial reports as far back as I've been able to look. So this isn't a change that is something new or some sort of omission of additional information. I would want to do a comparison really quickly to the required information associated with GASB number 68. Because the different accounting promulgations, while they encourage or quote-unquote say that they require some things, have different effects on the auditor's opinion. If, for example, the requirements of GASB 68 weren't followed, then it would result in an exception in the auditor's opinion. The supplemental information that's been identified in terms of management's discussion is not something that is supplemental information that creates a negative opinion from the auditor. So you have different requirements, and what we have is a presentation that's consistent with the district's presentations over the last several years. It does point, though, to the idea that we still have more work to be done in our financial statements. We have not just management discussions that we need to be able to move into. We also have 10 years of supplementary information that we want to be able to incorporate into the financial statements. Those second goals are in order to move from basic financial statements to the preferred financial statements. One of the examples is Napomo Community Services District, and every year they get an award for excellence in financial reporting because of some of this additional supplemental information that they have. So the financial statements have been presented consistent with the presentations of the financial statements in prior years, and the need yet to do more work in our financial reporting is part of the reason why we have slightly higher audit fees than we might otherwise have. The staff report of July 13th also points to the idea that there's two things above the 5% that we identified in July that could cause the audit fees to differ. One is the GASB 68 work. We've been able to do the initial years. The second year requirements have more complexities associated with them. But also the 15-year analysis that I did last spring with regard to the sheriff's building is going to require some additional specific audit work in order to for the change in accounting of what I don't think was proper of treating the sheriff's building as a water fund and a sewer fund asset and dealing with all of the general fund 2-2s and payables and everything, which was part of a presentation to your board, and your board approved that change in accounting last spring. So we do have still work that we are ongoing in order to improve the district's financial reporting and additional audit requirements in order to get that all straightened. The comparison of the different agencies that were mentioned, where there are some as low as 11,000 and some as high as 35,000, audits are not based strictly on the value of or the size of the budget, because there's certain requirements that auditors need to do irregardless or regardless of what size of a budget, what size the budget is. But the fees right now still are based on what we have inherited in terms of just an accounting system that was not well adhered to, and it does require the auditor to go through different testing. What was nice about it is that they didn't have any, the only finding that the auditor had was the delay in getting it done, and they recognized the situation of the district consistent with how we had previously reported it. So even though they've had to do much more auditing procedures based on what we've inherited, they still gave us a clean opinion, and they did not have any special findings regarding, you know, risks in terms of internal controls or other items. So I do expect that we will be able to bring audit fees down in the future. Certainly Ms. Cassiolo being on board and the level of detail that she's moving into is going to help with the final phases of making sure we've got, you know, our systems in place so that we can do more efficient audits in the future. But it's just part of the, you know, process of the district recovery.
Right. So if we were going to discuss the audit more, then I'm going to pull it out of the consent agenda.
No, I think we're done.
It's your board's decision.
No, I was just going to say I'd support the management statements in the future. I'd always noticed that it was missing. So.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
All right.
I'll move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, let's do a roll call vote, please, Celia.
Director Guerra?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes. And I have to applaud this staff. I've never seen a cleaner management letter in an audit, I think, ever. So I applaud you and to change systems and bring on staff all in the middle of it all. Kudos to you. So thank you very, very much.
You know, and I do want to make sure to recognize Caliber. The level of effort that they go through is undoubtedly... They eat some of their hours, they don't bill us for everything, and they've been giving us a lot of good feedback on even some of the issues like our chart of accounts and taking certain approaches that will help with a more efficient audit in the future. So they've been very good to work with.
Yeah, then they spend a lot of time here too, you know.
Yeah.
So, okay, very good. Business items. How about if I hold public comment till after 8B? That way people can comment on the business items. Is that okay with everybody?
If you hold it until after 8B, then you would be holding your action on 8A until after 8B.
Oh, right.
So both of these
okay,
have...
Okay, so I'll do public comment before the reports then. Okay, this time we're going to open the floor to public comment for items 8A and 8B. Is there any, Ms. Tacker?
I would like to listen to the report from your staff before I comment, and I object to this format.
Okay. Is anybody else who'd like to do public comment at this time on 8A or 8B? Hearing none, I'll close the floor.
On item 8A, Madam President, review of the district's budget status as of September 30, 2016. Ms. Cassiola is going to provide some staff comments on that.
Great.
Good evening, Madam President and Board. We put together your current year actual revenues and expenditures up to the first quarter. We have the percent of the budget used as of September 30th to track if revenues and expenditures are, in fact, within the budget. There are a few items that show higher than the percentage of 25% that we would expect during the first quarter. These variances occurred because these items are front-loaded and are accrued and paid at the beginning of each fiscal year. A couple of examples of expenses are the water supply from the Lopez expense, and we pay those in July, and we'll have another set in January that we'll see. Also, the local agency foundation commission expense, we pay that up front. In our membership expense in the water fund, we pay our California Rural Water Association at the beginning of each fiscal year. The boot allowance, we used 100% of because a part of the MOU, our employees in operation receive an annual boot and safety shoe payable in July of each year. Also, postage expense in the garbage fund is up. That's due to all of our new programs that we're implementing in the community and Cody going around posting, so that's up. A couple of revenues are higher than expected, one being water sales, and that's due to us having two billing periods of six in the first quarter. Our landfill savings payment from the garbage company was received in the first quarter, and that's a part of our franchise agreement. So that was unbudgeted, and we received it already. So that's good news.
Cash
the
check.
Yeah, really. the public facilities we received from the county already this quarter. Then there's a couple items to look for in the future. One being the emergency generator project,
right,
which should happen early 2017, and we'll come back with a budget adjustment for your board to approve. and review. But that will be funded with our public facilities reserves, which is at 180K at this turn time. Another project will be the CHC project, which will bring in $95,000 in fees, and that's on top of the reimbursable expenses for that infrastructure improvement. We'll also have the utility relocation projects that are estimated at $110,000 and $120,000, and they will also require budget adjustments for your board to review and approve.
Right.
The adjustments will come once the interagency agreement with the county is approved also by your board. There are sufficient reserves for both those projects, and at that time we should review reserves. But other than that, we seem to be on track.
And Mr. Ogren, you have you put an application in for the CDBG block grant for the utility
project. That is correct, I did.
And that's been turned over to the supervisor.
Yes, so this is, I think, the third year in a row that we've provided the CDBG application. I'm not sure what the competition is this year. I know that last year, for example, it was significant because of all the sewer connections in Los Osos.
Yeah.
And there was some significant funding to that. So I do, as Ms. Cassioli had mentioned, we do have sufficient reserves for these two projects. I would prefer to be able to get some grant revenues to help offset the costs. So the CDBG application is in, and I understand that Supervisor Compton's office is going to help our review with the planning department on that.
Right. And so do we know how much more of the block grant is going to have to go towards the Los Osos Baywood area? Is because it's impacted the whole county as far as block grants being available, block grant funds being available. So do we know how much longer?
I don't know. I know
that,
the final phase of connections for the Los Osos sewer project is happening right about now. And obviously through the CDBG program, what the county tries to do is to rotate that funding allocation to the various communities. So my hope is that it's our turn. But again,
it's been over 12 years.
Yeah, we just submitted the application about 2 weeks ago. So I imagine county planning is just now starting the review of the different applications.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for doing that. Carrie, is the backhoe, is it in the budget? Okay, great.
That was approved by your board when you adopted the budget.
Okay. I just want to make sure
that
my tools are bigger than Matt's tools. Okay. Does anybody have anything they want to comment on the budget?
This was well done. I would say on the financial considerations, though, about the utility relocations, this was anticipated at the time the budget was adopted that we would be having a budget adjustment once we had a better idea. So this was not an oversight. We just didn't want to throw darts. We thought we'd wait and see what we had a better idea. So
that is actually the proper use of a proposed annual budget, because it's all hope, you know, and history.
And that is correct. And so the estimates that Ms. Cassioli had mentioned of 110 and 120,000 were both received in the last couple weeks from the engineers who are working on that project.
Right.
So those are the best and most current estimates. Also, with respect to the agreement with the county on the Highway 1 drainage project, we have received back responses to our comments. Legal counsel Minery and I are going to be reviewing that next week. It may be on the board's agenda as early as December 14th. But that may also depend on how the county addresses. They have a current budget gap on that project, and so timing is going to be dependent based on, one, our final review with the county on the reimbursement agreement, and we've gone back and forth a couple times now, so it should be getting close, but also the county's overall timing on the project. And my last inquiry with them is, they had not yet identified how they were going to close their budget gap. So it will remain to be seen a little bit here on what their implementation timing will ultimately be.
Okay. Thank you. Does the board have any other questions for Mr. Ogren or staff or Carrie?
I do.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Two things. The public facility fees for the generator, do we know if we can use that entire amount? I mean, not that we necessarily will, but or is there only a percentage of it that we can use? I was under the impression in the past that we'd checked and could only use a portion of it.
It depends on how we implement the generator project.
And who it's supporting?
Yes, okay. Because the lower cost alternative is to establish the generator to be able to fund the public facilities, which is the fire station and the sheriff's station. One of the things that I need to do before that allocation is to come back and revise a plan on how to use those public facilities fees. But if we do the larger generator, which would approximately double our costs, then the larger generators would be used in order to power up well number 8.
Right.
And in that case, then there would have to be cost sharing with the water fund.
Okay.
Given our utility relocation costs, I am concerned about being able to dip that far into reserves in order to build the larger generator. But we are right now working on our cost estimates for the two different options, and we'll be part of what's presented to the board when we're ready to move forward. I'm also going to talk about that just a little bit more on 8B when we address some of our recommendations regarding how we go out and bid on new projects and everything.
Okay.
But the bottom line is it depends on the what the option is on the generator project, yeah.
Okay. My second question was just on the engineering for water and other reimbursements. I noticed we were at 86% already, and is it expected that we'll stay within the 10,000 for that line item? Or
And you're referring specifically to the line item on reimbursements?
It says engineering and other reimbursements. Is that for projects that
yes.
where we have the...
Yeah, yeah. So because, for example, we've been working a lot on the CHC and some of the other projects... there is a good likelihood that that expenditure on our reimbursables will go above 10,000. Because all of that money is reimbursable, then we will have an equal amount of unanticipated revenues then.
Okay.
So, you know, the idea is those, the reimbursable revenues and the expenditures, they move together. And if the expenditures go over budget, then we move up the revenues. But because it's reimbursable, it has no net impact on the budget.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. I have one question on the PERS. Oh, I can't spit the whole term out.
UAL? Yeah, that's the unfunded liability.
Thank you.
Annual liability.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out the A one. So are we...
unfunded actuarial liability.
I know it's budgeted, and I know that we've calculated it in, and we're pretty good on that.
Yes.
A lot of cities are having to deal with millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah. Two different issues. So the amount that's in the current year's budget, we were notified of CalPERS prior to preparing the budget, and as a result, the amount in the budget, even though it's already been paid, is all we're going to incur in this fiscal year. The second issue is what types of increases in the annual contributions might we be expecting in the future because of the unfunded liabilities. And CalPERS is going to be doing some workshops this fiscal year. One of the ideas that they are going to be discussing with everybody is their assumed interest earnings rate, which is 7.5% right now. They call it a discount rate, but it's assumed interest earnings of 7.5%. That's 7.5% net of their administrative fees. But their board is going to be considering dropping that 7.5% interest earning or investment earnings assumption, the discount assumption. If they bring that down, then everybody is going to see an increase in their unfunded liability, because the idea is if you assume less investment earnings in the future, then you have to collect more contributions up front. So this fiscal year, and we'll be learning more about their projections, they have indicated so far that they would not expect to do that change until 2018.
Okay.
But it's going to, you know, certainly be something that we're going to have to continue to evaluate.
Right. Very good. Thank you, Cassie. Anybody else have any questions?
No?
No. Okay. 8B.
Are you going to take public comment
before? I took it before.
Oh, okay. I see.
So on item 8B, the consideration of recommendations to approve a resolution electing to be subject to the Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act and introduction of an ordinance to provide informal bidding procedures pursuant to Section 2200 of the Public Contract Code. These recommendations are brought forward to your board at this time because essentially what we're doing is we're preparing to move forward with the CIP efforts. As Director Blackburn had mentioned, we are currently being recommended for about $175,000 out of the Prop 1 disadvantaged community funding. The majority of that money will be able to help move forward our CIP program. In addition, about this time last year, we were awarded about $198,000 from the third round of Prop 84, and I was informed by the county yesterday that we should see that grant agreement anytime. It's been a year, but with Proposition 1 and the various funding allocations that the Department of Water Resources is working on, they have been simply backlogged in getting grant money out. Nevertheless, we should be able to see that $198,000 within the next couple weeks. And granted, we're not going to move into construction right away, but I will remind your board that last spring we did an RFP to shortlist engineering firms so that we were prepared in order to get an RFP out on the street and get some proposals in to proceed with our CIP work efforts. I now envision doing it in two phases. One, a phase up front relating to the Prop 84 money that we received, and then phase two for the disadvantaged community money to move into the design work. And so this is setting us up to be able to move into construction at the appropriate time. The benefits associated with the Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting are a few. One is that the bidding limits themselves are more flexible. So if we have very small projects under $45,000, we can negotiate them, and we don't really have any formal bidding requirements. Between $45,000 and $175,000, we can do informal proceedings, which reduces the soft costs, the engineering costs of preparing plans and specifications. And then it's only the projects over $175,000 that we would have to do more of the formal and more extensive bidding requirements. Under Community Services District law, which is where we refer back onto the formal bidding, we still have a fair amount of flexibility there. But the point is that on the bidding limits, it provides us to target the method of procuring the contract based on the size of the project and allows us to be more efficient in the soft costs associated with engineering and administration. Therein lies a benefit alone associated with what under the code, under the public contracts code, this is called the alternative procedure. In some ways, I think it's actually the second benefit that might be more important for us, and that is that the Act provides a lot of really clear guidance on our construction cost accounting. And it has both worksheets and it has methodologies for calculating overhead on labor costs. And what that manual does is it reduces our need to spend hundreds of hours in developing our own procurement policies and our own procurement procedures for the award of construction projects. The state guidelines are very good. They're updating the manual right now, but that alone is going to save us a significant amount of time, both my time and legal counsel's time, in developing the procurement procedures because the state's manual is very detailed. Also, by following the state's manual on the procurement procedures, which includes like an informal posting them to some of the industry electronic boards in order to inform contractors that we have a bid that we would like them to respond to. By following the manual, in contrast to developing our own policies and procedures, we'll be following industry recognized standards, standards that the construction industry knows and understands. If we independently develop our own policies and procedures and procurement standards, it always begs as to whether or not we'll get a challenge on what we're doing and how does it conform, and whether or not we might increase risks of litigation. So following the state manual does help to mitigate some risks, and risks with construction always exist. So the timing is now in order to be able to establish some of what we need to establish to be able to move forward with the CIP program, as well as the benefits of using the manual and the benefits of the bidding ranges of the bidding limits. And on Monday, the CUCAC, the California Uniform Construction Cost Accounting Commission, met. CUCAC. It happens to be that the county's director of central services is on the commission, so I went up to the commission meeting. And one of the benefits, and we see, and there's frequently asked questions that are provided in the board package as well, is that that commission itself deliberates a lot of the questions that different agencies will ask them, you know, interpretations of the act. And so that's a big part. They meet on a quarterly basis. They help to address the questions that different public agencies have. And it's obviously not just special districts. It includes school districts. It includes counties. It includes cities. And it's a commission that's actively engaged. Half of the commissioners are public agency representatives, and the other half of the commissioners represent private entities and contractors, including an organization that's called CFAC, and I'm not sure what CFAC stands for, but what they are, they're sort of the watchdog organization representing contractors to make sure that agencies are implementing the public contracts code as it should be implemented. And so by making sure to engage with the commission, it is helping to address the details that really go beyond the manual and asking how is the act being interpreted, both by the commission as well as by private industry, and that all is beneficial for us being able to move forward with an effective CIP program.
Do they take labor and break that down for you too, and like Davis-Bacon laws and such? Or
so not Davis-Bacon laws specifically, because our prevailing wage laws are established separately, and the prevailing wage rates are established by the Department of Industrial Relations. But what the commission does is they provide us with overhead allocation methodologies. So underneath the manual, we really have a couple of different options. One is, for example, on labor. We can go through the detailed calculations of how we think overhead should be applied to labor costs. But the manual and implementation of the act also allows us to simply do a 30% overhead allocation, because they recognize that, you know, the benefits sometimes of going through all these detailed calculations, you know, sometimes those benefits don't outweigh all the work associated with them. And so they provide us with the ability to use pre-established overhead allocations as well, which is definitely beneficial. I will point out, though, that when we are working on grant programs, sometimes we're not allowed to use that 30% allocation. Sometimes specific grants will require us to do the detailed calculation. And so the manual then helps in terms of providing us guidance on how we do detailed calculations when grants provide for it. It also helps in non-public projects, like in our reimbursement agreements, because certainly we have a right to recover overhead on our labor costs. And one example is, if you were to take you know, one of our field workers, take the hourly wage, multiply it 2,080 to come up with an annual estimate. Well, you actually divided that number then by their productive working hours in a year. So if 2,080 is, you know, 52 weeks at 40 hours a week, we get to subtract out vacation time, we get to subtract out sick leave time, we get to subtract out holidays. And so productive hours are more about 1,760 is a general. And of course, it depends on if somebody's getting 2 weeks of vacation or 3 weeks of vacation. But the Act specifies these calculations, and that's important because even though that's generally the approach that we're following in calculating our labor rates right now, if we get questioned on it by a contractor or somebody else who's paying those reimbursement rates, we then have the ability to point to the guidelines in the Act in order to show how we came up with the actual numbers. So there's multiple benefits associated with it. The biggest one is just starting to get us prepared now for being able to move forward with our capital improvement program. And there's still going to be a lot of other work to do. But as we were talking about with the audit, we are working on our accounting systems. And to be able to now adopt this Act and start working on those details associated with our construction cost accounting helps us with developing this work in a parallel track with some of the other accounting measures that we're doing.
Great. Does anybody have any questions?
No, I just think it's a really good idea to use somebody else's work instead of recreating what's already existing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did notice that the one issue you left the control of all this into the board, not to just...
That's right. The Act allows for a delegation of power on the awarding of informal or negotiated contracts to, I think the Act specifically says, like county administrative officers, purchasing officers, general managers, and I just don't see the necessity of delegating that authority. You know, the number in larger organizations where they may be, you know, pumping out numerous projects. They could have 20 projects going simultaneously. And, you know, when I was with County Public Works, we could, you know, sometimes have dozens of projects going at the same time. Obviously, the County of Los Angeles delegates a lot of work to their Public Works Commission, but we don't have either the volume nor do we have impacts on your board's agenda. And the only time that I would really imagine that on a project-by-project basis, the recommendation might go forward to delegate is if we have some sort of a timing constraint and we really needed to move forward with it. But subsequent actions here, so today is the resolution to implement the Act, essentially, and to introduce the ordinance. Those are the two required motions up front. I don't see the necessity of delegating authority. Not doing it helps with transparency. There are emergency provisions that the board will need to consider on December 14th as well. And I do anticipate providing the recommendation that in emergencies that the general manager is able to move forward with procurement. In emergencies, the Act also requires that comes back to the board for essentially ratification, you know, because... if I were to declare an emergency and move forward on something, well, I would certainly need to justify it to the board at the next meeting. And during that time period that the emergency action is occurring, each agenda has to have an update on it. So emergency delegations make sense, but you know, the overall blanket or broad delegation, I just don't see as being appropriate for our district.
Okay.
I just figured that this wouldn't interfere, but I just thought I'd make sure. It won't limit the district's ability to utilize staff to maybe cut down on project costs like was done with Highway 1 and 13th in the future?
It gives us more flexibility.
Okay.
Because under Community Services District law, we can... implement a quote-unquote public project, as it's defined, if it's under 25,000. And under Community Services District law, if it's over, we're required to go to low bid. Under the Alternative Act, we can implement a project up to $45,000 with staff. And that's total project costs, including any equipment, we have to do the overhead allocations on labor, otherwise we can't, you know, shave it and try to justify that it's a lower cost. So it does provide us a little bit more flexibility. Given that we have Tony and two others in the field and the level of work that they have to do on maintenance projects, it's going to be a rare occasion that our staff is going to be implementing a quote-unquote public project. And I say quote-unquote because maintenance projects are not covered by the Act. We can always use staff to implement maintenance projects. Mm-hmm. It's really when you're moving beyond a maintenance project and into a capital project that the Act applies. And that is actually one of the regulatory powers of the Commission, because if an agency is trying to argue, well, we just did it with staff because it was a maintenance project, mm-hmm. and it's really a public works project, then the Commission can give you a strike, that's what they call it, three strikes in a 10-year period, and you're prohibited from using the alternative procedures, mm-hmm. and you have to go back and go back to the old rules. And so, like, one example would be we're looking at the pump station, the lift station for the sewer collection system on Pier Avenue. Mm-hmm. And clearly we could not justify that as a maintenance project. So that would be a capital project, and the equipment costs and everything would easily exceed $45,000. So we would have to go out and use the procedures to procure a contractor to do the work.
Okay, so I guess part of my question then is, would we be able to partially use, because I know that it said for like work you had to go out if the total cost was more than the $45,000. Would we be able to use staff for part of it and then contract the rest of it, or no? We'd have
no.
to use that.
Okay. That's strictly forbidden.
Okay.
What the Act speaks to is that it's prohibited from splitting projects in order to avoid the requirements of the Act. And in fact, and that was part of the frequently asked questions that they were addressing on Monday. An agency was, well, what if we did this? Or what if we did that? And their answer was, no, you can't do that, and no, you can't do that either. So, yeah,
and
no project splitting. With respect to our water system improvements and the infrastructure replacements, though, one of the strategies that we need to be looking at in 2017 is, after identifying the various segments of lines and that really have, like, you know, our 50-year-old pipes that need to be replaced, there's nothing in the Act that requires us to lump those all in as a single project. So as we develop our capital improvement program, we do need to identify these logical segments as being separate public projects. And that would be important for a couple of reasons. One is that some of them we might be able to individually implement underneath the informal bidding procedures, mm-hmm. and might be able to more efficiently move forward with them. And that's important because how are we going to ultimately develop the funding in order to replace our aging infrastructure? And the two different approaches is you go and get some grant money and you borrow some money and you just do it all at once, and then you have debt service that you're paying for many years. Or you establish the rates where you can do what's called a pay-go methodology, and each year you just simply start plugging away at these different capital projects. The pay-go methodology means that you're doing it over time and you don't have it all replaced up front. But the pay-go methodology also means that you're avoiding interest costs and other transaction costs associated with incurring debt. So those are the two funding different scenarios that we'll be analyzing as we move forward in the CIP program. And again, identifying these as separate projects will be important so that we can most effectively utilize the Act.
Okay, great. Nothing about planning for the future. Okay, so...
sounds like good policy.
Yeah, sound
yes.
policy.
Yes.
Is there any more questions? No? So is this broken into...
It's two different recommendations.
Right. That's what I was...
And because you have a resolution, I would recommend taking each one as separate actions.
Yep. Okay. So I'll entertain a motion. If anybody wants to make one.
I move that we approve a resolution electing to be subject to the Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act.
Second.
Okay. Celia, let's do a roll call vote, please.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes. Okay, it passes 5-0. And then the second one?
It's the ordinance, right?
Correct. I don't have an ordinance number, though.
We don't assign ordinance numbers until after they're adopted.
Right. So, ordinance number blankety blank.
Okay. And we're just introducing it, right? Because they're going to approve it at the next meeting.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, I'll move to introduce an ordinance to provide informal bidding procedures and set December 14th, 2016 as the date for the board to consider approval of the ordinance.
Great. Do I have a second on that?
Second.
Gross seconded. And Saya.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes. It's 5-0. It passes. Good sound policy. Mm-hmm. Consistency.
And as we, this is the last regular agenda item of your board. I think it's kind of a good landmark decision because the last couple years we've been doing a lot of work in order to, put the ship in the right direction. This item 8B really sort of signifies the future. And the new board has got the position of now saying, now that the ship is pointed in the right direction, what are we going to do to start implementing things that are for future community benefit?
Bake sales, bake sales.
Yeah, bake sales. I just think it's a really good transition item. It's a really good item for as your last regular agenda item, and I appreciate all the support that your board has done and helping us all get the district pointed in the right direction.
Well, it's been an exciting time, and the future's even more exciting. I'm really thrilled about the new board and the direction the town's going, and I think that we've all worked extremely hard, and now it's all starting to pay off. And
some exciting opportunities.
So it's a good feeling. Right. From where we started to where we're going.
It's been this real swing from management by the crisis and disruption of crisis to actually being forward-thinking and having discussions like PAYGO versus...
Oh, no.
I'm glad you said no, because I was thinking something else. Oh, sewer system overflow. That's what I was thinking. But that's...
Yeah. Okay, Matt.
it's so much... it's such a different day today that it is. And I'm really looking forward to handing over a functional organization to the next board. So.
Most definitely. It's going to be great. Okay. Utility items. None?
None.
Great. Okay. Hearing items... Did anybody write to us this month? Written? Received? Scratched? Out? Communication? None. Okay. We don't have any closed session? Wow. I know. And what we have on the agenda is that there won't be a meeting November 23rd nor December 28th. So
the special meetings then, I'll work in scheduling on December 1st and then December 2nd to swear in the new board members.
Right.
And then December 14th is
The next regular meeting.
Is the next regular meeting, yeah.
Okay. I'll be a memory by then. Yeah, to talk from the podium.
Are we ready?
Ready.
Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Good night.
So move.
Okay. Good night, everybody.